If it hasn't happened yet, it will. The Shadchan or Shadchanit is going to ask you, what's your Hashkafa? So I want to spend a few minutes explaining why the question is really not one that should be answered, certainly not in one line. And we'll start with a chapter in Revolbi's Alei Shur, Volume 2. The title of the chapter is Hashkafa. And you open up the chapter and you think you're about to read a treatise on Hashkafa. And he basically blasts the concept to smithereens. What does the word Hashkafa mean? So we find the word, the root of the word Hashkafa in the Torah, in Tanakh. The root is Shin Kuf Pei, Lehashkif. And we will have it in another couple of weeks. Vayihi Bashmoret HaBoker Vayashkef Hashem Al Machane Mitzrayim. We had it in Sefer Bereishis a number of times. Vayakumu Misham HaAnashim Vayashkifu Al Pnei Sodom. The angels looked out over Sodom. We have it that we ask God, Hashkifa mim'on kodshecha, to look out. The word lahashkif means to look out, to look from above. Even as a noun, we find it in Sefer Melachim, as a noun, it means windows. So the word lahashkif, hashkafa, means outlook. And Revolbi says, the real translation, when people use it today in a modern terminology, is best encapsulated with a German word, Weltanschauung. Now the word Weltanschauung, if you look it up, so it means an outlook, a world view. And we're used to saying that people have a Weltanschauung and they look at the world and interpret whether it's events, whether it's their political agenda, through their Weltanschauung. And people like to say that even Torah scholars, when they interpret, there's a strict Weltanschauung and there's a lenient Weltanschauung and there's a modern Weltanschauung. So Revolbi blasts this, because it sounds like we're walking in to our understanding of Torah with a worldview. And then we are interpreting and almost massaging our interpretation or our politics through that worldview. So Revolbi says that's exactly backwards. Your worldview comes from the Torah. And you have to build it from the Torah. And he quotes an unbelievable Rashi in Masechet Sanhedrin on the Mishnah. Elu she'en lehem chelek le'olam haba. It's a Mishnah, Perek Chelek. It's Daf Tzadik Amud Aleph. These are the list of people who have no chelek in Olam Haba. And the first one that's mentioned is Ha'omer Ein Trias HaMesim Min HaTorah. Trias HaMesim doesn't come from the Torah. So the simple way to understand that is you're denying Trias HaMesim. But the language of the Mishnah doesn't say you're denying Trias HaMesim. You're denying that Trias HaMesim comes from the Torah. Says Rashi, Shekofer b'midrashim didarshinim b'gemara lakaman. He denies the authenticity or the validity of the midrashim that the Gemara is going to use to learn out minyayin l'tchias HaMesim in HaTorah. What is the source in the Torah for Trias HaMesim? And then Rashi says an amazing thing. And basically, this is, Revolbi builds the whole chapter on this Rashi. V'afilu yehe modeh Umamin sheyichyu hameisim. Even if the person agrees, he admits, yes, I absolutely believe that there will be resurrection, there will be tchiyas hameisim, ani mamin 1,000%. Ella, however, lo remiza be'oraisa. But it doesn't come from the Torah. The Torah doesn't indicate it. I believe it, but it doesn't say it in the Torah. Says Rashi, koferu. He's a heretic. Hoel the oker, because he is uprooted, sheyesh tchias hamesim min haTorah. He's uprooted the idea that we got it from the Torah. And here are the key words. Ma lanu ule emunatenu. What do we care about what he believes? How did he know that? You believe the right thing, and you didn't get it from the Torah, says Rashi, kofer gamur hu. You're a heretic. The right belief isn't what's important if you don't connect it and build it from the Torah. And from this idea, Revolbi develops the idea that we don't walk in with a Weltanschauung and then interpret whether it's events, whether it's politics, whether it's Torah. But we have to build our Weltanschauung, if you will. We have to build our worldview by studying Torah. Obviously, to study Torah, you have to be a Torah scholar. And the point is that when you see different approaches, whether it's the things we spoke about last night, whether it's an attitude to the state of Israel, Zionism, whether it's an attitude to how do you insulate or integrate with modernity, an attitude towards secular studies, just to mention a few of the hashkafic fault lines that seem to be what creates the divisiveness. We have to realize that the answer to those questions has to come from studying Torah. And if you've studied a little bit of Torah and halacha, you know that there's machlokas. There can be a machlokas in how to learn pshat in a Gemara. You have a Rashi and you have a Tosfos. And you'll go a little further and you could have a Rashba and a Ritva. And you could have a Maharsha learning one way in the Rashi and the Pnei Yoshua learning another way. But they're trying to understand what it says from the text. But they build their understanding in halacha from the understanding in the text. And it's the same way in the Hashkafa. There are sources in the Gemara and in Chazal that we have to study as Torah scholars without an agenda and try to understand them. It's one of the reasons why it's so important to know how to learn pshat. Because you can sometimes identify somebody who is building some kind of an ideological or halachic framework of a conclusion where it's very clear that they're learning pshat in a Gemara where they have an agenda of how they want that Gemara to come out. And they would never learn pshat in the Gemara that way if they had no agenda. The proof is that when they learn and they learn Shomer Shemasar L'Shomer, and it's a complicated, and they have a way, and they have rules of systems of how to learn pshat in that Gemara. They learn it in a certain way, and then all of a sudden, when it's a Gemara that has to do with something that they have a political agenda or some kind of a halachic conclusion they want to draw, they're all of a sudden learning the Gemara very differently. So that's illegitimate. You have to study the sources the way that Torah is supposed to be learned. And we're not the biggest experts in halacha, that's why we have poskim. And we're not necessarily the biggest experts in hashkafa, which is why we have rabbeim and gedolim, who study the sources and have machlokas. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. And the Mishnah is learned very quickly, and everybody knows it, and everybody gets it backwards. Kol machlokes shehi l'shem shamayim, sofa lihiskayim. Kol machlokes she'ena l'shem shamayim, ain sofa lihiskayim. When I have a dispute that's l'shem shamayim for the sake of heaven, sofa lihitkayim, it endures. machloket shelo l'shem shamayim. But if it's a machlokas that's not for the sake of heaven, ein sofa l'hitkayim, it will ultimately not endure. Of course, the machloket l'shem shamayim is the good one. And when we think about machlokas and we think positive, we expect that the machlokas is going to be resolved. We don't want people always fighting. We want to resolve it, and that's a good conclusion. But the Mishnah says the opposite. The Mishnah says that when there's a machloket l'shem shamayim, sofa mapik hey, those of you who are studying grammar with Rabbi Fisher will make sure that you get it straight. Sofa with a mapik hey means its end. And in Gemara, remember, we need antecedents to the pronouns. The antecedent to the pronoun is the machlokas. The machlokas will endure. What does it mean a machlokas endures? It means the argument endures. We're always going to be arguing. It will never be resolved. That's what it says in the Mishnah. If you're arguing l'shem shamayim, the machlokas will endure. If you're arguing shelo l'shem shamayim, the machlokas will not endure. That's backwards from how our emotional attachment to machlokas is. Says the Maharal on this Mishnah. Well, what's the paradigm machlokas l'shem shamayim, hillel and shamayim? What's the paradigm machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim? Korach. So what were Hillel and Shammai arguing about? And what was Korach arguing about? Hillel and Shammai were arguing about how to understand God's divinely revealed Torah. That's the machlokas. L'shem Shammai. No ego. It's not about my ego. It's about the understanding of divinely revealed Torah. Says the Maharal, wait a minute. Now, God's divinely revealed Torah is infinite. It's infinite wisdom. The human mind, even the greatest minds like Hillel and Shammai, with no ego and brilliance, etc., it's a finite mind. How is it possible for a finite human mind to grasp infinite Torah? The answer is it's impossible. The most any finite mind can grasp is part of that Torah. And since every neshama and every seichel is unique and individual, another very important point, when we're talking about hashkafa, that the neshama, that the seichel is individual. So Hillel and Shammai, because of their seichel and their neshama, understood that part of Torah from different perspectives. So Hillel is understanding a dimension of divine Torah. Shammai is understanding an additional dimension of that infinite divine wisdom. Together, we have a picture of the complete, as much as possible, a more complete picture. But says the Maharal, if Hillel is accurately understanding a dimension of divine wisdom, that divine wisdom is eternal. So therefore, it has to endure. It can't cease to endure because it's infinite, it's divine, and it's eternal. So machloket l'shem shamayim, when it's pure in this quest to understand God's Torah, it is reflecting a dimension of divine truth which is eternal. Sofa l'hitkayeh, as opposed to Korach. Korach, really, Maral brings the pasuk that indicates it. Even though we think that Korach was fighting with Moshe, Korach is really fighting with God. Korach really held that God is not egalitarian. God is not fair. And therefore he was arguing with God. So that's ego. And anytime the machloket is built on ego, we know one thing. It can't last more than 120 years. Because it's your ego that's making you argue. Okay, so that's not eternal. That's gone within 120 years. So it's ein sofa l'hitkayeh. So we have to understand then that Torah is the way man is capable of understanding Torah, has machloket, it has different perspectives. So there is certain things where there's halacha. Says the Maharal, Hillel is bringing one dimension of eternal truth, Shammai is bringing another dimension. In the Torah, they're both true and eternal. In our practice, since we're human beings in a physical world, we have to paskin halacha, and therefore, even though Hanukkah candles 1 to 8 represents a dimension, a perspective of eternal truth, and lighting them 8 to 1 is an additional dimension of eternal truth, we as human beings have to do one or the, we can only do one. All right, and therefore we paskin a halacha. It's interesting to note, as Judaism, Jewish history developed and evolved, there was A, more machlokes, and B, less resolutions. And therefore we have different minhagim, different piskei halachos, different machlokes that are unresolved. Okay, so, but we have to understand then that it's that the decision comes from a deep understanding of Torah. The Gemara in Chagiga, which, when you hear the problem the Gemara raises, you will relate to the problem. Divrei Chachamim kidarvonos ukimasmeros nituim ba'alei asufos nitnu meroe echad. Okay, the pasuk in Kohelet, at the end of Kohelet, the words of the Chachamim are like goads. They're like spears that you use to guide animals. Like nails well planted are the sayings of the masters of the assemblies given from one shepherd. That's the pasuk. Very complicated, ambiguous pasuk. So says the Gemara, Ba'le Asufos. Who are these Ba'le Asufos? They are Elu Talmidei Chachamim, Torah scholars. She Yoshvim Asufos Asufos. They sit in groups. The Oskin B'Torah, and they are involved in Torah study. Halalu Metamim. One group says, Tamei. Halalu Metarin. Another group says about the same thing, Tahor. Halalu Osrim. One group says, Aser. Halalu Matirin. This, another group says about the same thing, Mutter. Halalu Poslim. This is Puzzle. Halalu Machshirim. No, it's kosher. I'm not going to give contemporary examples, but I'm sure everybody can relate to all of this. These occurrences in modern times, it happened in the Talmudic times. So now, you see this, and this group says Mutter, this group says Asr, this group says Kosher, this group says Pasul. Yomar Adam, Eichad Ilamei Torah. So, how can I learn Torah? What? This is confusing. How am I supposed to know what to do? Talmud Me'at Talmud Lomar. So the pasuk concludes, Kulam Meroe Echad. Everything came from one shepherd. Kel Echad, Natnan, Parnas Echad, Amran, Mipi Adon, Kol Hamasim Baruch Hu. Everything came from one God through one person, Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, and he quotes a pasuk. Afata, so what's your solution? Asei Aznecha ki Afar Keset. Make your ear like a horn. You know, you've seen the pictures, and you know they have a horn is big on one end, and it goes down so you can listen. It's like a funnel; it draws in lots, and then it comes down to a narrow place. Uknelecha lev mevin. So you've got to draw it all in and listen, and then you have to develop a lev mevin, a heart that really is digging deep to understand. Lishmoa divrei mitamim v'divrei mitarim. Listen carefully to those who are saying tamei and those who are saying tohor. Divrei osrin, divrei matirin, divrei poslin, divrei machshirin. What's the remedy? Learn and care and be very interested in the truth. Lev mevin means you've got to really work to understand. Open mind, really work to understand. And when you do that, you will find what part of this Torah resonates with your neshama, and that's who you attach yourself to. Now this has to come through Talmidei Chachamim, it has to come through Rebbeim, and this is what your Rebbeim did. And on some level, you have to do that. Now, it's got to be legitimate, authentic Torah. Halalu mitamim, atalu mitarim is not talking about every time Dick and Harry is allowed to have an opinion. We're talking here about the Talmidei Chachamim, sheyoshvin asufos asufos. People who are steeped in Torah. We mentioned this last night. We didn't go into it that deeply, but we're talking here about Torah giants. And then you could expect that there will be disputes, there will be machlokas. But it all has to start from a study of Torah, a study of sources. So when we ask the question, how do we, when we say what's your hashkafa, what you're really supposed to be asking is, how do you look at the world? And how do you answer that question? The answer to the question, how we look at the world, says Rav Volbi, has to be informed by Torah. It has to be informed by halacha. It has to be informed by the lessons of Chazal, by the lessons of the Rishonim, the Achronim. So when we want to answer the question, how do we look at the world? The answer has to be informed by Rav Kook, and the Chazon Ish, and Rav Dessler, Rav Hutner, Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Volbi, and of course, go further back, the Kuzari, the Rambam, the Ramban, the Ramchal, the Gra, the Tanya, because all of the people I mentioned first had their way of looking at the world informed by their predecessors, by those latter names that we mentioned. So now when we talk about, now you understand why Rav Volbi didn't like the word Weltanschauung, because the implication is I have a way of looking at the world, and now I am going to filter everything that I study, everything that I observe, whether it's current events, whether it's politics, whether it's the Torah I study, I'm going to filter it through my Weltanschauung. And says Rav Volbi, it's exactly the opposite. You have to have a tabula rasa, open slate, open mind. Yes, you have a neshama, you have tendencies, you have emotions, and there will be parts of Torah that will more, resonate more with your neshama. But at the end of the day, it has to start with a deep and objective study of Torah, listening, lev meivin, a heart that really wants the truth, not wants to massage it so that it comes out the way you want it. And when we do that, we can come up with some core values. So I don't want to leave you with complete confusion. And there are some core values. And we realize, and Rav Volbi talks about this basically throughout our Leishur. But we talk about values. So the word value in Hebrew is an erech, arachim. What does value mean? Value is relative. And it says, what's your hierarchy? Every time you decide how to spend your money, you are making a declaration of value. You believe that what you're using your money for, you value X that you're buying more than Y that you're not buying. Every time you decide how to spend your time, you're making a value judgment. Every time you utilize a resource, you're making a value judgment. How important is X relative to Y? So we need to have a value system. We need to have a hierarchy of values. And the Torah informs us about that. And it's very important to realize that as all of those names that we mentioned, all those Gedolim and the Rishonim and the Rambam and the Ramban who argue, and the Chazon Ish and Rav Kook and Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Hutner and Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, they all argue about lots of things. The hierarchy of values is very clear. And that's an important thing to realize, is that we get hung up on the things that are in dispute that aren't really that important. And we lose sight of the things that are consensus that are really important. The obvious ones, of course, are a meticulous observance of halacha, the primacy of limud Torah, the bein adam lechaveiro as being a foundation. But let's understand that there are a number of things, a number of I'll call of values. That are consensus, and you want to really incorporate, realize that when you talk about hashkafa and you want to really give the shadchan or shadchanis a run for his or her money, you can learn how to answer the question without talking about Zionism and secular studies and women's rights. What's my hashkafa? That man was created to be a one who gives and serves. That we live in a world of responsibility, not a world of rights. See, there's a political question. Right? Human rights. Judaism doesn't talk about rights. Judaism talks about responsibility. Of course we have rights, but those rights emanate and are there to enable me to fulfill my responsibilities. In the Western world, it's exactly the opposite. I start with rights. Listen, I have to pay a price for those rights, so I'll have to undertake some responsibilities. But I'm looking to maximize my rights and minimize my responsibilities. In Judaism, there starts with responsibilities, and your rights, you're entitled to those rights to facilitate and enable you to fulfill your responsibilities. That's a hashkafa, where we built that hashkafa from the Torah. There is an inner spiritual reality beyond what we can measure with our five senses. That's a very, very deep and fundamental question. And here's where we get into the dispute with atheistic scientists, cosmologists, biologists, which we just finished Hanukkah a month ago, Greek ideology. Is reality five senses, or is there a reality that transcends five senses? Well, how do we know? Go back to the Rashi. If you say, well, I believe that there is something beyond the five senses, but it doesn't come from the Torah, we don't know that from Revelation. I don't know, Rashi might call you a kofer. We know it because there was revealed to us by God and through prophecy. We are a nation that stood at Sinai. This is a foundational element of our hashkafa. We stood at Sinai and we transmit our truths generation after generation. Here's one of the most fundamental ones. We live in a physical world that is an entryway to an eternal spiritual world. This world is temporary. That has huge ramifications in how I run my life, in how I respond to events. It's a temporary world leading to an eternal spiritual world, and we're here to build that eternal world. We're in a world of delayed gratification. Talk about a political statement. Talk about an ideological digression from the Western world. We don't delay gratification in order to have more gratification. You know, I think there's a concept in the army. You work very hard so that you can rest even more. Okay? No. We work and delay gratification. That's a value. We don't delay gratification in order, right? You may have delayed your gratification in college so you can get a better mark on the test, so you'll get into law school, so you'll earn more money. So that delayed gratification was really for the payoff. But it wasn't a value of delayed gratification. It was just very pragmatic. No, we believe in delayed gratification as a value. The focus is building for the future. So all of these hashkafic questions, they're very important, but the answers have to be developed and extracted from Torah study. And therefore, this came up in a conversation also, you don't have to have answers to all these questions right away. Because you have to know how to paskin a halacha, but except for how you're going to wake up tomorrow, none of these questions really matter. Because tomorrow you got to wake up and be on time for davening and daven with kavana and learn Torah and not waste time and help other people. And these are important, and they are important because it does dictate how you're going to live your life on a certain level. But those decisions have to be made from the Torah. That we want to make sure that tchias hamesim min haTorah minayim. That each hashkafic element that we develop and that we concretize in our lives, that we know where it came from in the Torah. That is our hashkafa.